The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Hey, Merry Meet everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. Now, my guest tonight is author, speaker, and tarot diva, Sasha Graham. Now, she's been obsessed with the supernatural and paranormal world for as long as she can remember. In the late 80s, she began performing live vampire theater all over New York City, and in the 90s, she made indie films and became a B-movie queen, starring in a slew of straight-to-video horror flicks. Then came college, and after spending several years nesting at home raising her daughter, she decided to turn her passion to tarot into a career, and that in turn turned her into becoming a best-selling author whose deck of cards took her around the globe, teaching and lecturing on metaphysics. Now, her credits are many, including Tarot Diva, The Haunted House Tarot, 365 tarot spells, lots of projects with Llewellyn worldwide, like Llewellyn's Witch Calendar for 2021. But tonight we're going to be talking about her tarot deck, the Dark Woods Tarot, as well as a new virtual masterclass that you can all participate in called Illuminating the Shadow, which will be coming up the end of this month and again in mid-November. Now, Sasha says that her evolving story, and you might call it a fairy tale, just goes to show you what happens when you push forward, follow your instincts, and believe in magic. So, Sasha, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, this is going to be fun. There's so much to talk about. And, let me start by saying I like the quote on your Facebook page that tarot is always whispering the truth, secrets, and stories, and all you have to do is slow down and listen. And I find that to be true. When did you first become interested in the tarot?
You know, I've actually, a lot of people ask me that, and I think I've always been kind of fascinated with it because I'm a Halloween baby. Mm. So I've always felt like I was a witch and a ghoul. And when I was about 12 years old, we were doing a fundraiser at school, and I thought, oh, well, I'll read tarot cards under a gypsy tent. Perfect. And I ran to the mall to get myself a deck. And when I opened it up, I discovered I couldn't read them. I had no idea what I was looking at. And that really became the onus for my first book, Tarot Diva, because I was so excited and then I was so disheartened. But then, of course, when I learned how to read the cards, I realized it's not as confusing as it first looks, you know, when you first open a deck of cards. So, yeah, I've been fascinated with tarot my whole life.
And, you know, it takes a lot for somebody to be a really good tarot reader. It took me the longest time to start figuring things out and kind of, you know, looking at the pictures and everything. And it's tough in the beginning, for sure. Mm-hmm. And then There are people that, you know, spend their lives doing it, and it's just, it trickles off of them like it's just easy peasy. So anybody that knows it that well.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, I've met a lot of highly psychic, intuitive workers who actually really just use the tarot as something to focus on. In other words, they're like, the information's coming through no matter what. The cards just give me a nice way to kind of organize it. But yeah, I think Like you said, for most of us, it's very overwhelming in the beginning. And you get so excited because, like, there's nothing more exciting than a tarot reading. And there's nothing more exciting than really, like, playing with your cards and, like, getting into it. So, yeah, it can be so frustrating in the beginning when you're first learning.
Well, when we read the books about it, because we all get those books in the beginning, you know, mm-hmm. it's like you have to read them by the book. And it took a long time for me to realize that all we have to do is look at the cards and listen to ourselves.
Yes.
You know, but,
yes.
But not a lot of people pick that up. And so when I was doing other, when I was doing readings, at some point I got to the point and I thought, you know, these cards are a crutch in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because yes, you know, you look at it and stuff, but when I'm doing readings, sometimes, I'll get something that has nothing to do with the cards I'm looking at. Something mm-hmm. will pop in my head and you kind of have to double think yourself and say, do I mention this to who I'm reading? Or, you know, am I imagining this? You know, and I found out the hard way that whatever pops into your head, no matter what you're looking at with the cards, say it.
Always.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Always say it.
I know, no matter.
And I think that that's the gift of a tarot practice, though, too, because it really teaches you how you are psychic, how you're intuitive. It teaches you how your associative memory works. I mean, it even teaches you really to trust yourself. Whenever I'm teaching people tarot for the first time, which happens to me a lot when I'm at a place like Omega or Kripalu, and I'll say to them, you know, you already know everything that's in these cards because they're a reflection of your psyche. So you can throw the books out. You know, it's what does the card mean to you? What does that image mean to you? What does that energy mean to you? That's so much more important than reading about what I wrote about it or, you know, anybody else. And just that, like, seems to blow people's minds. They're like, what? What are you talking about? And I'm like, yeah, well, all of that esoteric stuff is there for your, like, tarot tool belt, you know, and you should read the books and you should do the work. But, it's about trusting yourself. And I always think that, you know, the work that we do with tarot should flow over to our regular life. And that's why, you know, they're so wonderful for intuition building, for trusting your that you know what you know when you know something, and then moving deeper and finding out, well, how is it that I know that? Like, is it my head? Is it my heart? Is it my gut? I mean, tarot, I think, acts as I always say it's the gateway to the supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it just, it's kind of like the vehicle that can take you really deep, really quickly.
Yeah. And you know, when I created my Oracle deck, that was one of the things that I wrote in the book.
Mm.
I said, look at the deck, hold each card in your hand. Don't read the book. See mm-hmm. what each card says to you. And that's really the best way to do it. But people, you know, I guess people are very focused on, well, no, this is the right way to do it. And we have a booklet here, so we're going to go buy the book. And that's kind of limiting. So I'm glad that, you know, we're talking about it now because it took a long time for me to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a lot of people should. Now, I want to talk about a couple of things that I saw on your website before we get into the Dark Woods deck and Masterclass.
Yes.
Because you've done a great job in bringing tarot awareness to the mainstream culture. And I'm interested in hearing about the events at the Metropolitan Museum of Art and the Morgan Library, where there were rare cards along with uncut Italian card sheets unveiled.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are treasures. And you know, you're not just talking to metaphysical folks. I mean, you're talking to mainstream. How'd that happen? That's great.
So, you know, it was so funny. My first event was at the Morgan Library, and I live in the city a few blocks away. So when I found out that the Morgan Library was in possession of about one third of the oldest tarot deck we have in history, they own about one third of the deck of the Visconti Sforza deck. I just thought, oh my God, that's incredible. And I ran right over to take a look at it. But of course, it was in their archives. It was not out on display. And I thought, well, this is like, are you kidding me? This is like tarot gold for people who know and love tarot. And so I started this kind of like email appeal to the curator of medieval manuscripts, who he's the one in charge of this, of the archive that holds the deck. And everyone in the museum said, you know, it's a very like fancy museum. And they're like, oh, you know, he's not going to, don't expect anything back from him. And lo and behold, I wrote him a passionate letter. I said, there are people who want to see this deck. And he arranged for us to have a live viewing. And so I put it out into the world. And I think a group of about 30 of us went in, and he gave us a private view, a private, like he took out the cards and showed them to us. And then subsequently, and it's a beautiful library, a museum, anybody, it's a library and a museum, anybody in New York City should go visit it, because it's very, it looks like you're walking into a Harry Potter chamber in the main library. And now they keep one or two cards generally out for the public. I like to think maybe we had something to do with that, because now typically you can usually find one. And then I figured after that happened, I thought, well, you know, I bet the Metropolitan Museum of Art has some interesting holdings. Sure enough, they did. And so I teamed up at that time with Robert Place, who created the Alchemical Tarot and lots of wonderful tarot books. And he's like a historian par excellence. And so I said, like, Bob, let's get this going. And I spoke to the curators. And again, they allowed us to come in about twice a year. They would pull all of, they didn't, their cards weren't as old as the Morgan Library, but certainly Minchianti cards, like ancient, old cards. And then Bob would lecture for 2 hours, and I produced the event. So that was phenomenal. And then I got to learn so much every time we did it, just listening to Bob talk about the cards. So yeah, I mean, it's part of our cultural heritage. And like, you know, you even look at the Rider-Waite-Smith deck, you know, that was created at the height of, you know, modernism, you know, at the turn of the century in London, you know. So this is like, it's not just like a dusty occult kind of thing. I mean, these are works of art that are in our hands that are being used every day. So, yeah. So thank you for bringing that up. Those were beautiful events and life-changing.
I was smiling when I saw it because, oh my God, mainstream, this is great. And you know, unveiling things that wouldn't normally be shown, and people that aren't interested in tarot would still enjoy it, because it's their works of art, as you said.
They're fascinating. And I will say just really quick to anybody listening who loves tarot history, the same is true for library collections. And so I went deep into the collections of the New York Public Library when I was writing the complete book of Rider-Waite-Smith Tarot for Llewellyn. And as a result, when I start, a lot of times when you're in a library doing research and you're looking at older things, the curators don't necessarily, or the librarians don't necessarily know what they're looking at. So it was interesting when I was writing that book, I found some original Pamela Coleman Smith playbills that she had created for Bram Stoker and the Lyceum Theater that was circulating in their general collection. And of course I went to the one of the librarians and I said, no, this belongs in your sort of special collection. So if you are ever coming across things in a library and a museum, let the curators, let the librarians know what they are, because sometimes they don't, they're thrilled to find out why something's important and where it should be placed. And it'll also preserve the item as well for future generations.
Well said. Also, I noticed on your website something about a tarot outreach program. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. So I was working with a company called Good Shepherd, And they were this amazing nonprofit organization that were helping foster children transition into adulthood. So what that essentially meant was, I would say kids about 18 to 22. So we're talking like college age kids. So now they're getting too old to be in foster care, but maybe, you know, they've had these tumultuous lives where they were like in and out of the system. And now they needed to be equipped as adults to go out and either apply to school or get jobs, you know, pay their own rent, figure all that stuff out. So this was a wonderful organization that really was like a dormitory and a safe haven for these kids. And so I would go in like once a month, and I thought, you know, hearkening back to what I was saying before about tarot being wonderful for your intuition building. Now, I ventured to guess anybody who has been in and out of the foster care system and anybody who's just had a rough time of it growing up has a damaged intuition, right? Because when adults are lying to you, when you're mistreated, when that you start to doubt, like you'll know something is right or wrong, and an adult's telling you no, you're wrong, and then you start to doubt yourself, right? And I thought, wouldn't it be phenomenal to teach these kids how to trust themselves, but do it with the tarot? And as a result, I put it out to the tarot community and asked people for tarot card donations so that all the kids could each get like their own decks. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the response was overwhelming. US Games sent decks, lots of like tons of tarot people sent decks. And it was just so fabulous. I mean, number one, because it's so much fun to work with kids that age, you know, 18 to 22, like the energy is off the chart and they're all excited about what they're looking at. And it felt like a fun, like college dormitory, but it was also, for me personally, satisfying to sort of show, you know, at how to use the cards, how to use them to trust your intuition, to figure out, to use them proactively. Like, what do I need to know? How can I use these cards to move further, faster, be true to myself? So yeah, those were great times. I don't do it anymore. I wish I did. I miss it.
Yeah. I miss it. Well, that was very cool. All right. So let's go to the Dark Woods Tarot deck. It's a shadow deck, and the teaser says, "Dare to enter the dark wood and discover your shadow self with this enthralling Rider-Waite-Smith style deck." And so, you know, people are going to wonder, is this, well, like one of the classical decks as far as arcanas go? Because, you know, we all have seen decks. Shipper used to send me a whole bunch of decks. And there was one called the Pirate Deck or something like that. And honest to God, and I couldn't figure it out to save myself. And there was another one where you kind of laid cards on top of, they were transparent. It was, it really kind of messed with my head. So is your deck pretty much the classical style?
It is. It is. It's a Rider-Waite-Smith clone in that all of the artwork is derivative of the Rider-Waite-Smith deck. So with a few exceptions where, you know, there's some liberties that I took, but very few. You'll definitely, anybody who's familiar with Rider-Waite-Smith would know a card by looking at it. And it's just wearing kind of different clothes. And when I describe it as a shadow deck, the reason that I do so is that the cards do tend to be darker. And I offer how to read a shadow reversal, which is a little bit different than the way that most people work with reversals, because I was really interested I think that people tend to read tarot on a very surface kind of positive upbeat level. And I had been teaching a lot of shadow workshops around the world, and I love shadow work because I find it life-changing. And I think that shadow work keeps you on point as a tarot reader. You know, the whole point is to see what you don't see. And that can be really hard when you're reading cards for yourself. So I wanted to take readers into this kind of Dante's Dark Woods, or, you know, the Luke Skywalker Dagobah cave, where, you know, you go in and what's in there is what you bring with you. So what you're really confronted is with yourself and all the parts of yourself that once you come to terms with, you can be a fully evolved human being.
Well, let's talk a little bit about our shadow selves. For those who may not be familiar with the concept or the term, why should everybody acknowledge and embrace their shadow sides?
Well, first of all, people, when they hear of the shadow self or the shadow side, they think it might be scary or tough, and it can be scary or tough, but the shadow holds all things, just like you're a complete human being, a complete universe unto yourself. The same is true of the shadow. So the shadow is those parts of ourselves that we repress, and those can be the dark murderous tendencies, but they can also be wonderful talents. There's as much good in the shadow as bad. The reason that it's in the shadow to begin with is that the light of our consciousness is not on it, right? Is that we don't necessarily want to recognize it. So many people walk around, we all justify what we do all day long. None of us want to look at ourselves as being bad people, selfish people. But sometimes we are, you know? And so shadow work, first and foremost, kind of helps you call yourself out when you're being less than nice. And that's not a bad thing, because once you recognize and take responsibility for that, not only can you make amends with maybe whoever you did that with, but you can also, you're less likely to do it in the future. The devil card in Tower, I often say the devil card gets all of his power from repression and energy. And when we're not honest with ourselves, then we're also not in alignment with the high priestess part of who we are. Again, that will keep us from evolving and moving into the person that we were always meant to be. Shadow work, it's fun. It's surprising. Sometimes it's uncomfortable. But nothing that's really good for you is easy. So I don't think anybody should shy away from it. And it just really profoundly opens up, I think it profoundly opens up the tarot deck.
Well, it's a good thing I asked, because two people in chat were saying, well, we were just going to ask that question, you know, just talk about it and work with it. Yeah. And you know, I always say that people have to recognize the duality. You know, there's light and there's dark. And, you know, you can't have one without the other. Wow. So you have to kind of recognize the shadow in yourself, and then be honest about it too, because, you know, we're always, like you said, making excuses for all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But we need to get into our own heads. We need to realize what we're doing and why we're doing it and how we're doing it. And, you know, it's very interesting that you can get that out of a tarot deck and a tarot reading.
Yeah. And what's fascinating about holding the light and the dark, you don't even hold them equally, because if you really look at the nature of light and darkness, light is a sliver of the infinite darkness. You look at the nature of the universe is dark. You know, we only live in the light because we happen to be living on a planet near the sun. And with that darkness, right, is boundless fecundity. Like this is potential. It's like darkness is like silence. It's screaming with potential. So it's not only the things that we kind of hide away from ourselves or the things that we don't want to look at. But when we move deeper into the darkness and into the shadow, we realize that just like a tree that's rooted into the ground, it's everything that we are rooted into and what potentially will someday be. So yeah, I think darkness is phenomenal.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's good from a witch standpoint, too. They say, well, witches are dark and everything. But, you know, they're not scary. I mean, darkness is not frightful. Darkness, to me, is very calm and very yes. peaceful and a time to think and not be bothered by bright things coming at you, you know, like we do every day.
Yes. Yeah, the poet David White, you know, he says sunlight contains boundaries, you know, and the darkness is infinite, you know, and exactly that. And we spend half of our life in darkness when we're asleep, you know. I couldn't agree with you more. I opened up my door last night. It was a really warm, warm October night. And just what you just described, I felt like I felt like the darkness was embracing me, like October. I just kind of felt like I fell right into the darkness of October. That was just like the sweetest lullaby, like what you just described. Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree with you more.
Darkness gets a bad rap a lot.
It does.
Uh-huh. All right, got a couple of questions from chat before we go to break. First question is, would this be a good beginner's deck?
The Darkwood Tarot? Yeah, I would say it would be a great beginner's deck, and I'll tell you why. It's really a beautiful deck. Abigail Larson, the artist, if you've Google her, she's... I think one of the most important things about beginning with tarot is that you're working with a deck that you're drawn to, that the artwork calls you back again and again and again. Mm-hmm. So for that reason, yes. Also, just because it's a shadow deck doesn't mean you can't use it for like regular readings. Of course you can. And as we said before, it's a Rider-Waite-Smith clone. So you're going to be working a lot with the energy that's quite familiar to all tarotists. So yeah, definitely, definitely. And the book that goes along with it, I think, is really quite complete and beautiful as well.
Yeah, good. All right, the other question, well, there's actually two more. What do you think about now a lot of tarot decks are coming out just with the major arcana? Do you think that that's a good way for people to read tarot or to learn tarot? Or do you think to do a proper reading, you need the entire deck?
Oh, I think you can use just the major arcana. And to be honest with you, when you're first starting out, that's something I often suggest to people so they don't become overwhelmed with the cards. You know, get a nice standing with the majors. You know, there's absolutely no harm in that. But I don't think that it's necessarily, if you're someone who's beguiled by tarot, by no means should you stop at the majors. There's so much depth and richness. And honestly, all the esoteric foundations that are placed that you can put within the context of tarot work with the 78 cards, you know, not just with the majors. So, you know, I say any kind of tarot that's out there is good tarot. If it's helping people and people are like digging on it, you know, then that's a good thing. That's a great thing. So yeah, the more tarot, the better.
Yeah, and, you know, when we learn it, but I've read books that said, you know, the major arcana is the most important arcana. You know, those are the cards that you really need to listen to, and the minor arcana are just kind of going to go along with it and kind of help you through it. And so I think people may be under a misconception that the major arcana are the only ones that count.
That couldn't be further from the truth. You need the whole deck, and you need the whole deck because in order to understand yourself and how you kind of operate as a human being, you need the four suits. That would be like living in a world without the four elements. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I get why some people might say, oh, well, these are the important cards and these are the ones that you really want to listen to. But like, you know, your life is made up of so much more than just those important moments that happen to last for like maybe 3 to 5 seconds, right? Mm-hmm. You need the rest of it, and you're just jipping. You're just jipping yourself of that. It would also be like only eating, you know, one kind of pizza. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Unless it's someone that's just isn't that interested in going deep with the deck. So no, you need the 78 cards, and you can see why. You know, it is the innate structure of tarot, which is why it's the gateway to the supernatural. The four suits are not just happenstance. They're telling you something, and they have such secrets and mysteries and wisdom to provide to you on every level. Yeah. No, you need the whole deck, I would say.
Okay. And one more question. When people are reading, a lot of people don't use the reversals at all. How important is that, do you think?
Well, that's so funny. So I always say I'm like a reversal renegade. There's about 5 or 6 different traditional techniques you could use when using a reversal. And I think it doesn't matter as long as you decide ahead of time, you know, as long as you decide before you begin the reading, yes, I will use reversals. No, I won't. And if you do use reversals, how will you use them? Will you look at them as opposite of the card's energy? Will you look at a reversal as a blocked energy? Will you use the reversals to help you? Like, I use them often in like a 10, 20 card spread. The reversals make their own pattern and call to me in a specific kind of odd way. So you just have to know yourself as a reader and decide ahead of time. I like oftentimes card in the morning, I will not look at a reversal just because I'm not interested in anything that might seem reversed. Like, that's just not what I want first thing when I roll out of bed. I want something good, you know, and something clean and clear. So just decide ahead of time. And there are no wrongs, you know, when it comes to reversals. It's what works for you.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break. So everybody stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the tarot deck. And she's going to pull a couple of cards so you guys can see how it works. And some good other stuff. So we'll be right back. Sit tight.
Stirring the Cauldron. We'll be right back. So don't go away. If you end up with webbed feet, remember, you've been warned. Missed an episode of Stirring the Cauldron? Then be sure to check out MarlaBrooks.com and check out the archive. And while you're there, check out Marla's weekly Witches Oracle card reading. Explore the site to find many great resources, such as information on tarot, oracle readings, metaphysical consultations, and links to all of Marla's books. That's MarlaBrooks.com.
You've no doubt heard of Tango and Cash, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Perhaps it takes two to tango. Well, now, on the first and third Thursdays of each month, there's a show called Tango and Friends at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network with your host, Bruce Tango. And yes, there will be at least two to tango on each episode, sometimes even more. There's going to be lots of topics and lots of guests you'll all know and lots of surprises. Tango and Friends, every first and third Thursday of the month at 8 p.m. right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hi, this is Sasha Graham, and I'm inviting you to my Tarot Masterclass, Illuminating the Shadow. Grab your tarot deck, a notebook, and your beautiful self for this live, global, interactive online event. It's happening October 24th and November 14th. Go to tarotpalooza.com for registration and information. That's tarotpalooza.com. I can't wait to see what's inside your shadow.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
And yes, we are back. And my guest tonight is Tarot Diva, Sasha Graham. And we're talking about her new Darkwoods Tarot deck. And if you listen to the commercial, we're also going to be talking about an exciting virtual event coming up. But first, Sasha, we talked about you pulling a few cards and just kind of showing people where they're going to find their shadow, how to, you know, the best way to use it, and just to get some idea about what the deck is all about.
Sure. So like we said, the deck is a Rider-Waite-Smith clone, and it's based on the story of the Shadow Witch. So the Shadow Witch, like so many of us, has a bit of a traumatic heartbreak, which kind of spurns her journey into the woods. Because I don't think any great adventure begins when you're just walking around and everything's fine, right? It's like reading, going to a tarot reader. Nobody visits a tarot reader when everything's kind of hunky-dory. It's always this event that kind of opens us up, which brings us into these places of learning. So she moves into the deck, and one of the things that makes this deck a little bit different, like I said, I talk about instead of using a traditional reversal, that we do a shadow reversal. So I'm going to show you what I mean. I'm going to flip a card, and oh, here we have the Empress. And So traditionally, when we look at a card like the Empress, and this particular Empress, she's relaxing on what I call a witch's hand, which is this big boulder found in the woods with like five trees growing out of it. And it looks like she's sitting in the palm of a witch's hand, and she's got her hand on her pregnant belly, and she's in a beautiful red dress. And typically, when we look at the Empress, we look at these qualities of motherhood, creativity, nurturing, and of course, the suggested pregnancy is metaphorical, right? It doesn't literally mean that you have a baby inside of you, but that it could be some creative work. And so we look at the Empress as the sensual, creative goddess. Now, to move into the shadow of the Empress, because this is an archetype that is a complete world in and of itself. If we were looking at the Empress traditionally, the mother, the creative protector, the sensual woman, we would say, yes, that's us acting. That's when I am being nurturing. This is when I've got, when I'm being creative. It's when I'm feeling sensual or issues of sensuality. But when we move into the shadow of the card, then we move into kind of her darkest aspect. So if we walk into the shadow, we see suddenly that the bright sunlight is turning dark, that this need to nurture is now the need to destroy, that the urge to be creative and nurture creativity is literally tearing creativity apart, shutting it down, literally kind of like eating your own children. So for yourself, you would say, well, okay, when was the last time that I shut down somebody's creativity? When was the last time that I was not nurturing and somebody needed me to be nurturing and I didn't have time for it? Right. And so you start kind of examining like, but all right, when do I act like this? And it's an interesting thing because then, of course, you say, all right, well, there was that time my husband, he came to me and kind of, and I was like just busy and stressed out and couldn't be there for him. So maybe that was that shadow. So there's all the different ways you can sort of say, okay, we can look at the darker aspect of that card and figure out when I embodied that. But of course, the same thing works in the opposite way. So you can take a card like the Three of Swords, which is traditionally a really dark card in the Darkwood Tarot. My heart is suspended in a tarantula's web with a big spider right next to the heart. And the Three Swords, of course, are plunged into the heart. And we move into the shadow of what is traditionally heartbreak and betrayal. And we find the swords easily coming out and profound healing. But of course, this is now the heart opener because the spaces that have been punctured by the swords have now opened up the capacity of the heart, and it's healthy and it's beating and it's fuller than it ever has been before. So we find that the shadow of the Three of Swords is actually quite beautiful, quite healing, and to be on the other side of what are some of the most painful moments of our life. So that's just a taste of how you might work with a shadow, with the Darkwood Tarot. And this is stuff we go over with, I go over with in my shadow workshop as well.
Mm-hmm. Another question from the chat room. Do you consider this to be a witch deck?
Oh, I consider every single tarot deck to be a witch deck. I consider every object on the earth to be a witch object. I mean, there's isn't anything that's not magical. If it's here, even the stuff that isn't here yet that hasn't manifested, that's magical, right? It's magic. It's energy. I mean, you don't need a tarot deck to read the tarot deck. You could just look at what's sitting in front of you and imagine putting borders around it and read whatever's in front of you as if it's a tarot card. And that's a really a fun thing to do when you're like bored or on an airplane or commuting to work or something, is just read the scene in front of you as if it was a card, because it's full of symbols and those symbols have meanings to you, and you can weave a story out of it and figure out where you fit into the narrative. So yes, this is an excellent deck for magic, but everything's good for magic.
Yes, you're right. I Now, you know, maybe some people don't realize that are new to tarot that each deck has a story. And you were just talking about the Darkwood story. But I was poking around your website again, and I saw that you had a deck called Tarot of the Haunted House.
Yes.
And the blurb itself just pulled me in. I mean, the users, I'm paraphrasing it, but the user finds themselves inside a mysterious haunted house, and moving through the deck, they unlock room after room and uncover the mansion's true romantic and chilling tale, while also discovering the fool's forgotten origins. Mm-hmm. And now I need to get that deck too. I'm just telling you, you're costing me a fortune. But no, but talk a little bit about that for just a second, because, and then we'll get into the virtual masterclass. But that is such a clever, beautiful deck, and so different. Talk about it.
Thank you. Well, you know, I had written a couple of tarot books, and I had never intended to make tarot decks. And my editor at Lo Scarabeo, and they're all Italian over there, they're in Torino, Italy, he said to me, Sasha, you got to make a deck. And I'm like, Ricardo, the world doesn't need another tarot deck. And he said, listen, you know, it is a one thing to look at a deck of cards, to read the cards and look down at the arcana and read them. But it is quite another to have the arcana spring from inside of you. And I thought, oh my God, now I have to make a deck. I want to feel the arcana spring from inside of me. Are you kidding? At that time, but I thought, well, what would I make? What would my theme be? What would the idea be? And at the time, I was profusely collecting soft cover gothic romance novels from the 60s and 70s, because I was in love with all of the covers, which traditionally feature a woman in a beautiful flowy gown running from a haunted house. Usually there's a lit tower and a figure behind her. And I loved all those 60s and 70s horror movies as well. And, you know, in thinking about why they all sounded so similar and why the plots were always so similar, I realized that the haunted house was the metaphor for the woman. Mm-hmm. And she began every book and every movie like a fool, like terrified and unsure of herself. Mm-hmm. And then, like we do with tarot, like when we face our fears, and we know from the number 9 spot in the Celtic cross spread, you know, your hopes and your fears, it's the same thing, that by the end of the book or the film, she owned the house. And I thought, oh my God, like she was the house, like she was in possession of herself. That's the world card. And I thought, what a fabulous idea for a tarot deck. And of course, you had mentioned my history and I love horror movies and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I thought, yeah, another one, like a deck that is a haunted house, because the haunted houses, they really are the symbols for ourselves.
Great idea. Absolutely.
Thank
great
you.
Idea.
Thank
All right.
You.
So before we start getting too short on time, let's switch from decks to virtual masterclasses.
Yes.
Illuminating the Shadow is coming up shortly, and it sounds great. When is the first class, and tell us about it.
So we actually, I premiered this class last month for the first time, and it was really exciting. Normally, like I was supposed to be in China right now teaching tarot masterclasses, but of course the pandemic put a halt to all of my traveling and lecturing around the world. So I thought, oh, let me start doing some stuff here from my house, bring the world, you know, here and for everybody. So I'm inviting everyone to really treat this weekend as if we're all on retreat together somewhere. And actually, October's masterclass kicks off tomorrow night with a VIP witches party with me. And then that's, I think, about an hour and a half of getting together and visioning and lots of kind of like fun, witchy fun. And then on this Saturday, from 12 Eastern Standard Time to 7 o'clock, it's a 7-hour course with an hour break for lunch and some 15 minutes breaks thrown in. We'll be doing the Heart of the Shadow work. So that will be this weekend. And then again on the weekend of November 14th. And there's a few different ticket options. You can go to tarotpalooza.com to find out all of this information. But you can do a VIP package, which includes the witch's pajama party. You can do just the afternoon class, or there's a purchase option for a recording as well. So there's plenty of different ways you can get to the material. And you don't even have to really be that well read in tarot. Like a beginner could take the class. We certainly use a tarot deck for the shadow work, but really it's a lot of writing prompts and a lot of exercises, reflective exercises where you're going in, to your own experience as a human, figuring out what exactly exists inside of your shadow. Yeah, so tarotpalooza.com is where you would want to go to get all the information about that.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much going on in that. I mean, all right, 7 hours already. Who knew? You know, master classes or what? An hour, 2 hours, you know, maybe a potty break or something. But this includes teachings and, like you said, exercises, meditations, readings, completely comprehensive. Those who can't make it to the live class for whatever reason, the recording's the next best thing to being there. I mean, it's a great option.
Absolutely. And with a recording, then, of course, you can also take this work at your own pace. You know, there's something to be said for full immersion, for sure. And like, it was really phenomenal last month. A few people went away to take the class. Like, there was one woman in the class who went to a cabin up in the woods of the Blue Ridge Mountains, so she could really spend the entire weekend, you know, focused and intense doing this work. There was someone else in a yurt doing this with her friend, so like I said, normally this is the kind of stuff that I would teach at a retreat center, that I would teach in Israel, by the Dead Sea, but this is an opportunity. Anybody can do this in their home, no matter where they are. So it's a pleasure to do it. It's really fun. And in a way, I feel like it makes this accessible to more people than traditionally, you know, I might reach. I don't know. Yeah. So it's fun. Again, it's a silver lining for this pandemic time, for sure.
Oh, it's much needed. And thank you for doing that. There's a question from chat. And she wants to know, what all types of information can you get from tarot, like future events or situations or opportunities, current ones, other things? And say what you have to say, and then I'm going to jump in with something too. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So again, sky's the limit in what you can get from tarot, depending on, number one, either who you are or to who you're getting the reading from. Because like I said, some people are so incredibly psychic and intuitive, they might just be using the cards to kind of ground themselves or like to focus the reading. So it really depends. If you're asking for yourself, again, it depends on what kind of what sensitivities you have as a human being. I always shy away from predictive readings because I think a predictive reading takes the power out of, it takes control out of your hands. I think tarot needs to be proactive above all things. What can you do? Like, the first thing you should do with tarot reading, with magic, with witchcraft, the most magical thing you can do is take responsibility for who you are and the power that you have. So with that, I do shy away from the predictive readings. However, I have been known to still try and like just see what the energy is, of course. And then, you know, you want to be wary of doing things like poking into somebody else's business. You shouldn't do that with the cards. The manners that apply to regular life apply to tarot and magical work as well. Manners, respect, and everything you put out comes back to you three times. So you wouldn't want someone to do that to you. So don't do that to somebody else. But there, I think sky's the limit with the tarot. And again, the more you work with it, the deeper you go and the stronger you can build those muscles, whichever muscles you're trying to build. So what were you going to say, Maya?
Well, two things, but just a comment now, before I say what I was going to say. Haven't you noticed that sometimes during a tarot reading, cards will come up and you kind of, you know, acknowledge them, but then, you know, the next five cards you draw all have the same message. So sometimes when you're doing readings, you're kind of forced into saying things like you might not want to talk about future events, but, you know, the universe kind of twists your arm and you end up doing that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, listen to the cards. I mean, they don't lie, but sometimes they get very, very, I don't want to say pushy, but they want you to know that there's things you have to talk about. But the other thing I was going to mention was the difference between an oracle deck reading and a tarot reading. Because some people don't know that one is different than the other. You know, I always say an oracle deck is really good about telling you stuff that you need to know, but it's a lot easier. Like if somebody's wanting to get into the cards, maybe starting with an oracle deck just to kind of get the feel of it is a good thing, and then graduate to the tarot, because like what, 40 cards as opposed to 78 with oracle decks. Well, mine's 45, but no big deal. But we still don't, I don't do reversals on oracle decks, you know. But again, you use it the same thing. You get to know your deck, and it's a witch's oracle deck. You get to know that, and I keep telling people you don't have to be a witch to use it, and the same goes for your deck. But there is kind of, I always think, and that's not putting down oracle decks too much, but I think sometimes a tarot reading can be way more comprehensive. You know, if you're doing that. And because a lot of people use oracle decks, they'll pick a card for the day. You know, this is what's going to happen today. And I, as the commercial said during the break, yeah, I post a card every week for people. You know, this is how your week could go if you wanted to, you know, if you want to follow it. But when something is really, really seriously detail-oriented and stuff, it may be best to use a tarot deck, right?
I agree. And also, and this goes back to what we were talking about with using the minor arcana as well, which is the numerical structure of tarot is what makes it so helpful. So if you're constantly drawing threes, which is the number of creativity, right? So this is the stuff that goes beyond the photo, the pictures or the art, right? When you're looking at the numerical structure, you get so much information just from the numbered of the cards that comes up. Like if you're getting a lot of threes or a lot of tens, you know, you're at the end of a situation. Yeah, I agree with you. And I do think that an oracle deck can be like a nice, I guess like a gateway into tarot so that you can start feeling comfortable with a deck of cards. But tarot is very, very specific. And like you said, the cards speak up for themselves. Like they'll like kind of knock you over the head when you, like I've been knocked over the head with the Ace of Pentacles and the Queen of Pentacles since summer. I'm still unpacking what all of it means. But they're like, hey, lady. Get the message.
I know. I love the way they do that. It's frustrating at times, but I really do love the way they're doing that. They do that. And also, let's talk about the graphics for a second. Now, my oracle deck, I kept simple, you know, very, very simple pictures, very simple things. You know, there's an athame, there's, you know, a magic wand. I mean, there are a whole bunch of cards, but they're very simple. So you look at the card, you know exactly what you're looking at. And a lot of people don't understand with the tarot card, you have to look at every little bit of that deck. I mean, of that picture, because there's like hidden messages there. There's or messages that you need to see. So it's way, way different, and but still beautiful both ways.
Yes, for sure, for sure. And why would we limit ourselves? Like, why not? You know, why not have both? Why not have all? But I will say again, and obviously, because I'm a tarotist, the other, I think, big advantage with working with the tarot is that you really are, it is like working with rosemary or sage or with a live herb or with a live flower, because when you move into the arcana, you are moving into an energy that has existed for as long as humans have. And it's a very, every time people flip cards and do a reading, they're moving tarot into the future. But it's one with an extraordinary past and a packed past. And so when you use meditations, a meditation to enter the card in your mind's eye or in the sacred imagination, not only do you come into contact with the energy of the arcana itself, but you quickly discover others have been there before you. And so that's the other thing. I just think the tradition, the usage, and the energetic, you know, which isn't to say that's not there in oracle decks, depending on what's on the oracle. I just think, like you said, like tarot is specific and mm-hmm. intense. It's intense. And it's awesome. Yeah. But we're intimacy junkies. That's why we read the tarot anyway, right? So we want
to
get...
Yes. Yes. And just, you know, being able to open up and read any kind of card is a blessing.
It is.
If you allow yourself. And everybody can. And people, some people don't realize that people used to read playing cards.
Yes.
You know, and so it's just kind of a really wonderful mixture of what we can do and how we can do it. And it gets the imagination going. And most people, especially now in what's going on, you know, we can't focus on things, and everything is kind of scattered and mixed up. And you know, I mean, we're going through the Tower card right now, I think.
Agreed.
Yeah, and just being able to pick up a card and read it, just take one card and look at it and explore it and see what your mind tells you. I mean, it's a great getaway from everything that's going on around us.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And to your point about being in the Tower energy right now, you know, what we have to look forward to is the Star, because that's the card that comes after the Tower, you know, and the Tower is the breaking apart of that which never fit together to begin with. That's why on the Rider-Waite-Smith, you see a square tower, which is being with a circular crown that's getting knocked off of the top. It wasn't right. It needed to reconstitute itself. So I don't think all of this will have been for nothing. And I think that when we're all in that energy of the Star card, which is the quiet after the storm, the calmness, the serenity, and the peace, then we can all evolve collectively, you know, which is why we're here.
Exactly. Hopefully that's why we're here.
Hopefully.
Okay, so in addition to the masterclass, it looks like you have other events coming up from time to time as well, like Tarot Space Tuesday.
Yes. So Tarot Space Tuesday is this really fun thing that I do every single Tuesday night. And it started because when the pandemic began, I started doing my yoga classes. Obviously, I couldn't go to the studio, so I started doing them up in my attic virtually with my teachers, and then with my teacher's teacher in India. So 3 times a week, I practice with Mysore, India, and it's lovely. And I would be so excited. That was like the high point of my day, and I thought, why am I doing yoga up in the attic, but I'm not doing tarot up in the attic? So I just put together Tarot Space Tuesday, which is a really fun hour every Tuesday where we talk. There's kind of like a lecture slash talk from 8 to 8:30. And then I put everybody into breakout rooms, and it's a surprise who they get. They do a reading for each other for 15 minutes. We reconvene and then we're done for the night. It's just a quick hour, but it's so much fun. And I invite anybody to pop on my website and get the Zoom link and come join us, because it's a really good time and they're a great group of people.
Okay. So where can people find all of this? And then I have one more quick question from the chat room that we're going to need to do. But I want to get all your information out, where people can find you and, you know, the YouTube channel, all the rest.
Of course. So first and foremost, I'm sashagram.com, Graham with 2 A's. And that's my website, where you can find links to anything and everything that I do. All of the information and registration for the Illuminating the Shadow Masterclass, both this October and next month in November, you can find at tarotpalooza.com. That's tarotpalooza.com. And then, yeah, I have a YouTube channel under, I think, Sasha Tarot Diva. I'm on Instagram, Sasha Tarot Diva. I'm on Facebook, just under Sasha Graham, I think. I should probably know this stuff, right? Google me. I'm really out there. I think you can find me relatively easily. And if you're interested in any of these things, and my books are all usually available in any metaphysical shop, Barnes and Noble. They're pretty easy to get your hands on. Of course, my Amazon author page or bookshelf page, you know, you can find everything along with like reviews to see if, you know, to see if the stuff would be to your taste. So I hope you come check me out. I've written a lot of really fun books, like 365 Tarot Spells, 365 tarot spreads, tarot diva. They tend to kind of cover the gamut of all the different ways you can use the cards. So yeah, check it out.
Okay. Here's a quick question, and we're going to have a quick answer because we can't go over too long. But it's from Kathy, and she said, while I was doing a tarot reading, I came upon some very personal information about this person. She said, I knew it would upset her to hear this, so I thought, but before I brought it up, I asked the cards why she needed to know this again. The answer was a positive one, so getting the positive closure on it. I told her, and she cried. Mm-hmm. She told me the only one that knew that information was her and her husband. Mm-hmm. She said, should I have said anything, or should I have done what I did, or should I not have said something? It turned out to be healing, but not sure how to handle situations like that.
Yeah, well, good on you that you even went so far as to sort of consult the cards. Like, you double-checked yourself before you moved forward. I don't think a lot of people would necessarily have the wherewithal to do that. I think that when people sit down for a tarot reading, you can also ask. You know, you could check in with them. But I think that people do tend to want to go deep. I think the best harbinger is kind of figuring out, is what you're saying hurtful or is it helpful? That's something only you can decide and figure out for yourself. But I think that's where experience comes into play. We're going to be put into situations as readers where we don't necessarily know if what we're doing is the right or the wrong thing. And we have to trust ourselves. And it sounds like not only did you trust yourself, but you double checked with the cards, you did your due diligence. And, you know, there's some readers out there who actually get excited when people cry because they think that it means not that they're like sobbing like for a bad reason, but they think that means that they've touched upon things that were poignant and deep. I don't think that every reading needs to end in tears at all to be helpful. But I think you just have to tread gently. And as long as your client's highest good is always at the forefront of your mind and that you proceed carefully, like it sounds like you did, I think that you're doing good work and can be pleased with what you did. So good on you.
Great. Thank you for that. We got to go. So Sasha, thank you so much for joining me tonight and, come back sometime, please.
I would love to talk about
maybe about the haunted deck. That would be fun. Okay.
I would love to, Marla. Thank you for having me.
And let's thank everybody for listening in and, until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited.